good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, December 14th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody.
Oh, as the East Coast is preparing for the storm of the century, they've been telling us. You know, they're saying the worst storm of the season. Well, the season's just getting going. So, anyway, we haven't had that many in this season yet, so I guess it would be the worst storm of the season. So, so I hope it's you don't get too much snow up there. We were talking about it prior to the beginning of the program, so... So you East Coast folks, stay warm. Gold today got the chill, though, and had a chilly downside of $11. The New York spot price aftermarket at $1,829. Silver was down 7 pennies at $23.94. Platinum was down 2, 1,010. Palladium was down $10, 2,342. You have the USDX today down 0.25. And we have the dollar down, really? 90.73. Crude oil was up 39 cents at 46.96. And Dave, I know prior to the program, I tried multiple places to pull up the numbers for the paper markets. And nothing was coming through. I couldn't get any. And I tried all of them. So I don't know if you can bring the paper markets up. For some reason, I've tried 4 different sites, and I can't bring up the paper markets. Are you there, Dave?
Melody, I am here. Sorry about that. I do have what appears to be the day-ending numbers for the Dow Jones, down 123 at 29,923. The NASDAQ up 62 to 12,440. And the S&P 500 down just shy of 16 at 36.47.
All right, yeah, I can't figure out why none of mine are showing up. The 10-year yield is 0.89, and European Asian markets are showing not a whole lot of excitement there. And so thanks for getting those numbers. And I know you have scheduled, you wanted to do I think the first topic here was about the vaccine, but I want to take us to a different path. May I do that?
Oh, please do.
And I'm sure you are aware of the PNC Christmas Price Index.
Yes, I am.
And so I don't know if you can pull that up and we can just go over it. It's kind of interesting this year. The PNC has been doing this for 37 years. And they calculate the prices of the 12 gifts from the classic holiday song, The 12 Days of Christmas. And I usually do this every year on the radio. And it's, you know, again, for 37 years. So it's kind of interesting to see the impact of inflation from year to year, because I think every year it actually has gone up since they started this in 1987. This year's a little different, Dave, and it kind of reminds me of government work at its best. Because they're blaming the pandemic, but they're actually showing that the total Christmas price index is down 58%, 16,168. That's the true cost of Christmas decreased in 2020, as this year's index accounts for cancellations of many live performances. It is a silent night at most symphonies, and the lights have dimmed for many dancers this holiday season, which contributes to the year-over-year decline. I mean, that's a big decline. But if you look at all of these individually, I mean, there was a couple of them that stayed the same, like the partridge and the pear tree. But if you look at the turtle doves, that's up 50%. The three French hens, that's up 15%. Birds, four calling birds, they stayed the same. Gold, the golden rings, is up almost, 14.5%. Six geese a lane is up 35%. Seven swans a swimming. Birds just weren't in tune this year, zero. And eight maids of milking, that remained the same. And then they did not include nine ladies dancing. They did not include 10 lords a leaping. They did not include 11 pipers piping. They did not include 12 drummers drumming. So how could you actually say that there's been a drop of over 50%? It reminds me of government numbers. That's what government does. So, I mean, again, it's kind of a little deceiving since those things are not available. There's still a price on them. You know, you could at least use last year's prices and factored in the government's 2% inflation or whatever it might be, right?
Well, you got the Lords of Leaping, which, you know, last year was the second highest cost component, and Nine Ladies Dancing, what was that? The fourth. So, you know, and then the other two, they were in the top five as well. So that's a big chunk of the index. So you raise a good point.
So, I mean, they could figure it in if they want to. And there was something else that I saw in this report where it shows in 2014, let me see if I can... They revised the 2014 traditional price was adjusted to better reflect open market pricing. So I'm thinking to myself, were they all the years after that were adjusted? And how would that affect the pricing of inflation as going along? And they also, it also cracks me up in the report that they gave out, Dave. They actually, let's see if I can bring that at, they actually show the true cost of the Christmas in song, which is what, 364 presents, was $105,561. But the core index, excluding swans, is kind of like our core index, excluding food and energy, the real important things. Let's take that out and see what it really costs, and it's really nothing. So... anyway, I thought it was kind of humorous this year and with everything going on. So I guess they'll be doing it for 38 years, and it'll be interesting to see the comparison next year to this year. And maybe we can put that in the newsletter next week just for something a little bit fun to do. So, you know, Congress reportedly is closing in on a final agreement again for the spending bill needed to fund the government past Friday. The omnibus federal funding bill is targeted for release as soon as tomorrow. The legislation or the legislative language for more than $900 billion in pandemic aid, that was scheduled to be unveiled at 4 p.m. at a press conference today, always after the markets close. Lawmakers, and that's when most of your... if any news is going to come out that could impact the markets, they will do it at 4 p.m. or 5. Lawmakers approached an agreement on the spending bill by agreeing to keep the Veterans Affairs Mission Act under the $1.4 trillion budget gap. Now, that's a pretty significant victory for House Republicans that had insisted on this provision. As a result, the $12.5 billion for VA health care improvements will be paid for with savings elsewhere in the budget. And so the White House had resisted the Democratic proposal to designate the money as an emergency and thereby evade the cap. This agreement will be part of the 12-bill package needed to keep the government funded, running through September 30th. And funding runs out again this Friday because they did that extension last week. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce said Congress should set aside state and local aid and liability protections. Yeah, I don't think there should be any liability protections, but that's just me.
Well, these are two. It's not just you.
You too?
Me too.
Yes, they should not have liability protections. The two key contentious issues in this pandemic relief negotiations. Anything else in there, Dave?
Well, you know, there's this ongoing debate since the fall, in particular, various people, and now the Chamber of Commerce have been saying, well, a partial agreement is better than none. You know, the Democrats, on the other hand, have been saying, well, we have a limited number of attempts at doing this. This was pre-election, certainly. And they don't want to settle for less than they thought they could otherwise get. Again, not knowing or believing that the likelihood of a post-January 20th add-on, pandemic relief add-on, as well as the amount in any such creature is going to depend on the January 5th runoff elections in Georgia, who controls the Senate. So, thing is, Melody, there is so much at stake. I mean, regardless of whether you agree with stimulus in this respect as a matter of principle or not, with obviously, unemployment on the rise, still at least 11 million people or over, between 10 and 11 million minimum, still out of work, less employment than there was before the recession began in February. This is a big deal for a lot of these businesses that are hanging on by a thread, as well as these unemployed people whose remaining benefits run out in just 12 days from now. So, you know, we've got this bipartisan group of eight lawmakers. We're hearing now that they plan to split up their $908 billion package into two separate bills. One including just the liability protections and the aid for state and local governments. I think that's roughly $160 billion, as I recall. Those are the two most contentious issues among the two major parties. And of course, the other bill would include all the other provisions that had reported that broad consensus, including some extension of unemployment compensation, as well as PPP-like aid for small businesses. So, be interesting to see what happens if, in fact, McConnell, in particular, agrees to attaching a stimulus package to this omnibus spending bill, and whether or not the Dems in the House. I mean, they're kind of in a tough situation. I heard this afternoon that some were saying that they shouldn't vote on the long-term spending bill unless, you know, stimulus is a part of it. So there's still a lot of unsettled, Melody. You still also have Joe Manchin of West Virginia has a package out there. McConnell has his own package, which apparently is the deadest of the proposals. And of course, there's Steve Mnuchin, who has his own $900+ billion proposal. So,
and you know what? I mean, this is what I find most disgusting. You know, I agree in principle. Yeah, I mean, but we're past that point. And the thing of it is, even with the first stimulus, how low did it trickle down? You know, we continue to read about all of those with the wealth, and it helped some people, I'm sure. And it certainly helped people that didn't have the jobs and so forth and whatnot. But the problem is they always create these bills and these stimulus and these packages that are really, truly more harmful to a lot of the people. And
how so?
and there's just never, well, you know, it's just, I mean, when you start making more money from a job, if you start making more money from unemployment and stimulus than what you were actually making on your job, and I mean, this whole thing, the moratoriums, I get where that's helped a lot of people, but nothing is being, what was thought all the way through to what happens afterwards. And everything, all of these politicians, I mean, it's just, now let's just get it done. And they're just, you know, I can't, you know, what is beyond, I mean, they're just holding off doing it for, I think, other reasons than what we really read about. And it's just get it done. And then come up with something that, who's going to be addressing these home issues come January? What's going to happen then?
You mean homeless issues?
That's homeless,
gonna,
yes.
As it's going to turn out.
Yes. Or are those millions
million
of
people?
Yeah. Aren't those millions of people, it's not going to have any impact? Or do they all, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just really disgusting to see how they're handling all of this. And under the pretenses of that they're both fighting for, you know, their own, you know, their own party.
The common man.
For the common man. It's disgusting. So, you know, so what is the, you know, so what's next? You know, McConnell favors Mnuchin's. And then you got this and that. And it's just, I don't know. People should be, of course, most people don't even know that this is going on. So, because it's certainly not talked about in any of the mainstream news programs. Nowhere to be found. There's only two things that is being talked about in mainstream media on any program. That's either the virus, election fraud, or what's the other one, Dave? Hunter Biden. I mean, those are the only things that are being discussed. Not the 40 million people. Or how many people are going to be out of, not 40 million, but how many people are going to be out of homes? Homeless,
no,
Dave?
No, 40 million people. An estimate could be affected. Who are behind in arrears in rent and mortgage.
40
payments.
Million. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Remember, folks, Greg Hunter will be joining us tomorrow, so make sure you tune in. And we're going to be talking, I'm sure he's going to be talking about many things. And we're going to continue talking about the massive global debt that's creating a bunch of zombie firms. I remember at one point in time, it was always China. I remember years ago, coming out of the Great Recession, it was China that had all of these zombie firms. So now, there's a new global wave of these zombie firms. It's spreading. The zombies are spreading. So what's it mean, the term zombie firms? That was coined to refer to firms that were propped up by Japanese banks during Japan's so-called lost decade, following the collapse in 2001 of the Japanese asset price bubble. You didn't hear a lot of people talking about Japan's, but I remember, Dave, if I'm wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't it China, too, after that? With their zombie, maybe they used another term?
I got to believe that, I mean, it certainly would have been appropriate for it to be attributed to China. But Japan is really the only country I recall.
There's been multiple studies that suggest that these firms contributed to Japan's economic stagnation by distorting market competition and depressing profits and investments in healthy firms. And this is why that matters. There's a new report prepared for the G30 says that overburdening the corporate sector with even more debt in the response to the pandemic could create a new wave of zombie firms with harmful consequences for the prospects of economic recovery. Interest rates stay low. Governments are going to continue to support struggling firms. That even just increases the risk of these zombie firms. In fact, we have already been seeing this happen, Dave.
Well, we have, and this particular report for the G30 comes on the heels of the Bank of International Settlements latest quarterly review that noted a divergence in the assets of corporate vulnerabilities may be emerging. The report pointed out that while equity prices were reaching record highs and credit spreads had compressed, banks have significantly tightened their standards and cut back lending. The bottom line, the G30 report quoted, among others, Piyush Gupta, who's CEO of the Singapore-based DBS Bank. Now, Gupta expects the issue of zombie firms to be a particular challenge among small and mid-sized businesses. He predicts a wave of defaults that will add pressure to the financial sector. He asks the same question that we here in Financial Survival have been asking at least since the Great Recession. Do you keep using public finances to support companies, or do you let creative destruction happen? Well, whatever the answer to that particular question is, we'll talk more about how corporate debt is on the verge of creating global insolvency later on in today's show.
Well, you know, this is really amazing. And with the newsletter going out today, we're also going to have Doug Nolan's article in here. And he talked about what you're going to talk about here in a little bit is the Airbnb IPO, and yet it's all part of the exuberance, the amount of money and this wealth creation and how it's going to end. And, you know, we're talking about when you have like BlackRock, who everyone is saying has now replaced Goldman Sachs. I mean, BlackRock was always there. And they were always in the background doing government's bidding. But now they're, you know, now they're ready to come out in the open and replace Goldman Sachs, I guess. But BlackRock, Fidelity, they get allocated large chunks of initial public offerings, offering stock in these white hot companies. Following day, these shares end up being worth vastly more than the investors paid for them. Sounds like a pretty good deal to me. More money has been made this way in 2020 than in any prior year, even including the height of the dot-com bubble in 2000, and we all know how that ended. Yet major companies are postponing their IPOs as a result, worried that they'd effectively be giving billions of dollars away to undeserving investors. When do they get to make that decision, you know? But according to an analysis by Dealogic, IPO investors have made more than $50 billion so far this year just by being allocated stocks and holding on to them for a single day. That's a new annual record. And, you know, the year's not over yet. So here's how it works. Most companies go public in a two-stage process. First, they sell stock to investors at a preset price. The following day, those investors start trading that stock on the open market, usually at a premium to, you know, what they initially paid. Individual investors with accounts at Robinhood or E-Trade have no ability to buy stock at the IPO price. If they want to buy the stock, they have to pay the higher open market price, Dave.
Yeah, and last Wednesday, Airbnb sold over 51 million IPO shares at $68 each to some of the biggest and most powerful investors in the world. These are individuals now. They're institutions, by and large. The total amount paid for those shares, $3.5 billion. Now, by the close of trade on Thursday, the following day, those in less than 24 hours, those shares were worth $7.4 billion, representing a mere overnight profit of $3.9 billion for those institutional investors. Repeat that story, almost 200 other IPOs this year, and windfall profits end up totaling $51 billion. That's a larger profit than is made by any company in America, except for perhaps Berkshire Hathaway and Apple. What looks like windfall profits to investors often looks like money left on the table to the companies that actually sold the shares. After all, why should Airbnb sell shares for $68 on Wednesday when it could sell them for $144 on Thursday? Well, two multi-billion-dollar companies, Roblex and Affirm, have already decided to push back their IPOs as a result. Well, there's much talk of mechanisms that would allow companies to sell shares at the market price. So far, that hasn't happened. The biggest opponents of such structures are, not surprisingly, the large investors who benefit from the current setup. Once again, Melody, this shows that the stock market is not a level playing field, and certainly not when it comes to IPOs.
No, and that's what Doug Nolan writes about. You know, he says the exuberance is stunning. This is out of a Bloomberg article. He says Airbnb is still valued at more than Marriott and Hilton combined. The price differential to its IPO had many on Wall Street scratching their heads. He said, note to head scratchers, unnecessary. The blistering IPO market is but one of the myriad late cycle manifestations of acute monetary disorder. This isn't normal, ladies and gentlemen.
I like that, acute monetary disorder.
Yes.
AMO.
AMO.
I'll have to remember that.
If Tesla can trade with a market capitalization approaching $600 billion, more than double Toyota, what's keeping Airbnb from sporting a snazzy $100 billion valuation?
Yeah.
November's record $121 billion ETF inflow, boosting the year-to-date inflow tsunami to a record $659 billion. Friday's record, $18 trillion of negative-yielding global bonds, now including over-indebted Portugal and Spain. Bond yields, negative 0.64%. These darling IPOs, along with the equities market, more generally are dispensing some serious wealth creation. Future historians will recognize it much more in the context of bubble period wealth redistribution and destruction. For now, this fiasco is one heck of a party. Patrons luxuriating at the endless punch bowl. It's a globalized bubble. Notably, central bank credit, Chinese finance, speculative leverage, securities credit, and sovereign debt across developed and EM economies. And once a quarter, we have the opportunity to examine the Fed Z1 flow of funds report, data that help illuminate the U.S. financial sector's contribution to the great global credit bubble. The numbers are so huge as to be numbing. It really is, Dave. And, you know, yeah. I think the key word that we're seeing is wealth redistribution and destruction.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. It's part of what's wrong systemically with our system. I mean, you've got the Goldman Sachs's, the Citigroups, the JP Morgan Chases of the world. They're hired to underwrite these offerings to seek buyers. And again, you got the California pension plans, you got the just huge corporations, including some of the banks I just mentioned, who are sort of, we'll call them first in on these IPOs. And, you know, just individual retail investors who might have an interest and should have the right to get in there don't have it until at least days later after the IPO. You know, by then the prices, you know, generally have gone up. In some instances they go up and then come down right away. But by and large, availability, the access to these by everyday investors, is limited. I'm sorry.
No. I didn't mean to interrupt. But you mentioned the California pensions as one of it, and you're. That's, to me, it's what we're seeing here that is propping up the whole system. I mean, that's what they need to continue to function. So what happens when all of these things do reverse? And the thing of it is, they will reverse. I mean, that's how I read that. When you're looking at this unprecedented government debt expansion and I mean, all of this that's going on, not only here, but around the world, they need to have these, you know, they need to have these big numbers, Dave, just to keep functioning.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'd already been defaulted on. So how long can it go? Bubbles always break. Bubbles do burst. You know, then you have a little help from your Federal Reserve. You know, this week they're going to link the future of asset purchases to measures of employment and inflation without taking any immediate action to alter the pace or composition of bond buying. Well, I'm not sure what all of that, Dave, how it all fits in and everything. But I don't know. What can you tell us about it?
Well, I mean, the cautionary word, I guess, is that these are just based right now on the opinions of 47 economists who responded to this survey, as they always do prior to Federal Open Market Committee meetings, which will take place tomorrow and Wednesday. Now, a majority, although a slight one, of these economists said they expect the new guidance, Fed guidance, will be approved at this week's meeting. Most of the rest of the minority expect it to be in either January or March. However, the vast majority expect it to happen. Although, notably, they think monetary stimulus is seen as unlikely. That is, more monetary stimulus. Now, two-thirds of the economists expect the FOMC to extend the average maturity of ongoing bond purchases before the end of next year. And we've heard that since this fall, that they'll, instead of pushing the shorter-term maturities, they'll go after the 15, 20, and 30-year end. And while the impact of any such guidance, I think, is really limited, I mean, it's because there's always a baseline, or there's always a measurement against a baseline, which typically is, you know, whatever the latest current policy is. But this additional guidance could provide the market, stock market in particular, with more clarity on what conditions eventually the Fed's going to use to either increase or decrease the pace of its bond purchases in this case, or the measures that are going to lead to a movement, presumably upward, of interest rates. Now, we know that the Fed's currently buying $80 billion a month in treasuries, $40 billion a month in mortgage-backed securities. That's to put downward pressure on borrowing costs, real actual borrowing costs for households and businesses during the pandemic. So that's the crux of it, Melody. It's not a big deal in the whole scheme of things, although in a short-term sense, because we see how little it takes anymore for markets to move on seemingly inconsequential or less consequential Fed policy moves.
But don't they already measure it to employment and inflation?
Sure.
So they're just making it official.
They're just, I think, reinforcing the average inflation goal that they started talking about this summer.
Hey, we're heading into the break. I hear the music. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Dave, your article in today's edition of the American Survival Newsletter starts off with the observation that companies around the world are at an increasing risk of insolvency. Is that correct?
Well, I think so. You can see these historical icons that appear on the face of fiat currencies like Ben Franklin, to Mao Zedong on the yuan, just bobbing in the water, and struggling to stay afloat in the angry seas of, you know, what's really a tsunami of an economy right now. Around the world, companies are at an increasing risk of insolvency, and the threat of it is growing exponentially as we speak. So, at least, so say a number of the world's most respected economists and monetary authorities. And yes, a few of them do exist. Among them, in this particular case, which will be an eye-opener to you, Melody, I believe, are former ECB President Mario Draghi and former Bank of India Governor, I'm not even sure, Raghuram Rajan. Now, Draghi and Rajan say there's a growing corporate insolvency crisis in most of the world as balance sheets are hit hard by losses, corporate balance sheets, and the resulting need to pile up debt. Now, both of them are co-chairs of a group of other economists that we mentioned earlier, authored a report for the Group of 30, some other economists, academics, and central bankers. Now, this Draghi-Rajan narrative warns that actions taken by central banks and governments in response to the pandemic are just masking the true state of the economy. It's a disguise that they say can't last forever.
Wow.
That's true.
That's, yes. And they say that the central banks could continue to pump money through the financial system for a long time. Businesses can't survive on liquidity alone, Dave.
Well, indeed. I mean, after a while, the corporation's going to remain unviable regardless of how big the liquidity support is. I mean, at this point in time, the next issue we've got to be worried about is a surge in non-performing loans all over the banking system in most parts of the world. Now, Rajan said on a deeper level, unlike central bank support, which will be in place for quite some time, massive fiscal support packages from governments will have to come to an end. I'm not sure that's true, by the way. For better or for worse, I'm not advocating a never-ending support foundation. But you know, at that point, Rajan says businesses are just going to start failing, and questions are going to need to be answered about not just the companies that go under, but about those connected to them as well, banks, wealthy individuals, and so forth. Now, Rajan declared, "We're not out of the pandemic, but we should start preparing for what comes next." And what comes next, he says, are the consequences of the tremendous amount of support we already have in place.
I mean, I'm not a fan of Draghi, and he famously said in 2012 that the ECB would do whatever it takes. Bernanke said that. Japan's Abe said that. They've all agreed to do whatever it takes to support their own economies, Dave.
Well, and now go ahead. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, now he believes that central banks have no alternative. Well, that's kind of the same thing, I guess. But to continue to keep these rates low and to keep printing endless streams of money, that is their way to address whatever it takes.
Yeah, now, whether or not his thinking in this next piece is based on his research in this Group 30 report, or whether he's just going along to get along. I mean, Draghi says, and we've talked about this all year, this is not a V-shaped recession. This is a long recession. He adds that for fiscal authorities almost everywhere, we're in a period of time where new spending programs succeed old programs without any break, and bigger numbers come every day. The main issue is, how do you design these programs? How well do you spend this money? Because ultimately, growth will depend on that. And in some countries, in fact, he says many countries, they'll depend only on that, Melody.
Yeah, but isn't that the problem? Just like they said, business will just go out of business, period. I mean, they'll just fail. I mean,
well, it's true. I mean, we know that so much of, you know, what's been going on and what was going on in February and in the months leading up to that is that in so many of the developed countries around the world, you know, we don't have to just focus on the U.S. We'll talk about statistics in a couple of seconds, but going into this, the extreme level of debt, both in government and corporations, were built up.
Mm-hmm.
So to dig themselves out of this, or to dig each other out of a hole that's been exacerbated by the pandemic, governments and corporations are going to have to add to their debt. And that just isn't going to work.
And that's all that they can do. And that's why when we see these numbers in these paper markets and things like that, that's all money being created and funneled just to keep the system flowing. Just keep these governments, local, federal, around the global, Dave. So you're absolutely correct with this article, you know. To dig them, they can't dig themselves out of the hole. Doesn't matter how much money they create.
Yeah. Well, let's just share these numbers, then we can move on. But as of the end of the third quarter this year, global debt reached 364% of the world's GDP. Global debt was 210% of global GDP just 5 years ago. Now, over that same five-year period, U.S. debt held by the public grew from 71% of GDP, $13.1 trillion, to 99% of GDP. Now, this isn't gross debt again, because gross debt is well over 100% now. But of debt held by the public, it's now $21 trillion as of the end of the third quarter. That's an increase of 60% in just 5 years. Incredible. That's not sustainable. In the U.S. alone, we're talking about, you know, the fact that a lot of this has been disguised by the extreme support that's in place. In the U.S., the Fed's balance sheet has grown by $2.6 trillion over the last 5 years, from $4.5 trillion in 2015 to $7.1 trillion at the end of the third quarter. It's an increase of 58% in 5 years. In 2020 alone, it's grown by $3 trillion, more than that five-year period. So we'd see that there's a slight trend downward up until 2020. And that's thanks to the Fed asset purchases propping up U.S. stock markets, corporations, and state and local governments like never before. I don't know. It's just a recipe for economic disaster, Melody. And what follows that? Social unrest, political turmoil, and a new surge in gold and silver.
1-800-375-4188. Don't wait. Get out of those paper markets now. I mean, I'm not a financial planner. It's just common sense. And I get when you're making and these numbers seem high that things will never end, particularly to a lot of you day traders out there. You think that you can do no wrong. Well, it's not you that are going to be doing any wrong. It's just the markets that are going to turn on you, as they always do, because you don't have the control over them. They control you. And it's, I mean, how many times do we have to go back in history, Dave, to show happened there, it happened there, it happened there, it happened there. And if you think you're going to reverse this time, where are we going to reverse to?
Well, all I can...
Yeah, everything that pulled us out of all those things that reversed, there's nothing next. It's starting back from scratch, is the way I see it. But...
Well, I was just going to say that all those incidents, time, number of times that you just mentioned, all that shows me really is that despite what's always been in front of us, it's kind of like the Good Witch of the North, Glinda telling Dorothy, you've always had the power right in front of you. We don't and haven't learned our lessons.
Nope.
So history keeps repeating, repeating, and repeating. And it's going to continue to do that because, I don't know, maybe we're just not paying enough attention.
There's a lot of distractions out there, Dave. And you're right. It doesn't take rocket scientists to figure this out. It's just by following a little bit of history and common sense and seeing how things are being created and see how that dollar is being created. Mm. Well, you know, as we see more and more business, when we talk about the retail apocalypse, there's another one. It's called GameStop. And I just lost power.
Oh.
Well, I didn't lose power. I lost my internet.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, it just came back.
It's back, yay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another one, GameStop, is the largest video game retailer in the world. That was really weird. After years-long downward spiral into debt, the company has announced it's going to close more than 1,000 stores by the end of its fiscal year in March. Now, this comes after the company has already closed over 783 stores just over the past 2 years. According to the Business Insider, the gaming's giant financial decline began nearly a decade. It hit rock bottom in 2018 and then began reporting an annual net loss of $485 million. Mm. So, you know, last year they had a little bit of a rebound, and they just lost $83 million. That's a pretty nice rebound. But this year, with $19 million in net losses, GameStop is gaining ground on its debt, but just not fast enough, Dave.
Well, I know if this had happened 10 to 15 years ago, when my son was in his teenage years, this would have been been devastating news in our household. As I can tell you, there were shelves and shelves full of products from GameStop in our household alone. It tells you what kind of parents we were, I guess. But just a very popular company for millennials and younger people around the world. Now, ExxonMobil, they're going to lay off more than 700 workers in just the Houston area, according to a notice it sent last Friday. The largest U.S. oil producer had previously said it would cut its global workforce by around 15%, or 14,000 jobs, mainly in the U.S. This is in addition to that. We know that Exxon and other oil companies have been slashing costs due to a collapse in oil demand because of the pandemic, and due to ill-timed bets on new projects. That's going to come as early as February 2nd. Mm. Now, it still has about 88,000 workers, including 13,000 contractors at the end of last year. And just real briefly, Southwest Airlines has announced the layoff of almost 400 employees based out of McCarran International in Las Vegas. Melody.
Yeah, we can continue to see, you know, the layoffs. I can't imagine what jobs report's going to be come January, but for December, maybe we won't see any impacts, because if there is any holiday trade, you know, new hires or part-time hires, that might reflect some of the layoffs and so forth, but might be February. But, you know, somewhere along the line, Dave, we're going to start seeing the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And we continue to see the shutdowns again of these cities. I just can't imagine what these people are doing in businesses and so forth. But, hey, we're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you, Dave. And until
then,
be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.